Just this week, I finished reorganizing the modest walk-in closet that serves as my office at the Togiak Refuge office building. Please don't misunderstand me. I like my office. A lot, actually. I've had opportunities to move into larger spaces and always passed, for a number of what I considered to be good reasons. One of those reasons is because I have a really great window view. Granted, it's a narrow window, befitting the back wall of a walk-in closet, but it overlooks trees that often have a vast array of bird species flitting about, providing me with a nice dose of daily nature, mere feet from my computer and my desk. Anyway, this week I gave my office a major overhaul, and I can now say it's as clean and organized as it's ever been in the nearly 9 years I have occupied it. I added a large shelving unit and a bench seat with storage to better organize the many items I'm in charge of, such as binoculars and animal guides and study furs and such. I also added a bit more in the way of personal touch, too, putting up a favorite photo of my grandparents, a very recently completed antler mount of one of my caribou from last fall, and a fish. A northern pike, to be exact. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. The fish in question is not necessarily one that I actually caught, or even all that large. It's something like a 36-inch fish and maybe 15 or 16 pounds. A very average-sized pike for many parts of our state, and I've caught a fair amount just like it during my years up here. In fact, I have a number of photos I could put up beside the mount that look close enough in size that no one would ever question that it wasn't actually that fish. This particular fish mount is a fiberglass reproduction. More on that in a moment. And one that I put together years ago for the sake of advertising, when I was still doing a bit of taxidermy for pay on the side. It's been sitting in a back bedroom at home collecting dust, and now it adorns my office. With fishing in all of its various forms being such a huge thing around Southwest Alaska, fish taxidermy is probably a bigger thing here than it is in some parts of our country. I have addressed taxidermy as a general topic on here before, and even did an episode, I think, on antler mounts, but I don't think I've ever talked specifically about fish taxidermy. With spring now officially here, and well underway in other ways as well, maybe it's okay to begin thinking about fish, and for some of you, sport fishing, which can lend itself to the careful consideration of fish taxidermy. One note before I continue. I am not currently working as a professional taxidermist, nor have I for several years, so please don't mistake this episode as a thinly veiled attempt to promote myself or what used to be my company. It's merely an informational episode about a topic over which I actually field a fair number of questions. My first attempt at taxidermy in any form involved a fish, specifically a Central Kansas bluegill, papier-mâché, plastic baggies, and model paint, along with a set of commercial fish eyes that I purchased. Frankly, the results were ghastly. Among the many lessons I learned on that fish were that baggies make poor fin backing, model paints do not work to paint fish, hand painting a fish is both difficult and archaic, and shrinkage, where actual animal skins of any type are concerned, is very, very real and must be dealt with. I still have that fish and look at it from time to time to remind me of how bad things can be, but also to remind me that we all start somewhere with anything we do. Fortunately, taxidermy catalogs are free and have very good photos. Well, that's how I taught myself, and my subsequent efforts produced improvement. I still wouldn't say I'm any sort of expert, but I did get to the point where I did feel okay entering competitions, I even won a few, and doing work for profit, which certainly speaks to a better quality product than that initial bluegill. It'd be mighty hard to find a buyer for something that ugly. For those of you who have ever considered fish taxidermy, there's basically two routes you can go, and living where we do and catching the fish that we do, I'd even go so far as to argue that you really only have one. There are skin mounts and fiberglass reproductions. Skin mounts, as the name would imply, makes use of the actual skin of the fish and, in some cases, all of the natural parts, though in Alaska, it's pretty common to use an artificial head. Fiberglass reproductions do not use anything from the actual fish, other than the measurements as provided by the angler who caught it, anglers as a whole being notoriously famous for their tenacity with regards to truth in numbers. Let me share with you a little bit about what goes into each of those two types of fish mounts. Skin mounts are still fairly common for warm water species, such as what I worked with in Kansas. Fish like bass, walleye, and crappie. Warm water species have less oil to their skins and, coupled with larger, more durable scales, are easier to remove, clean, and preserve. On some skin mounts, the only thing you see on the outside that's artificial are the eyes, which are some type of glass or acrylic. On some skin mounts, artificial heads are used, and in some cases, even artificial fins, if the natural fins have been damaged beyond repair. These items can be combined with the actual skin to give the best possible end product to the angler. The bulk of what I've done since being in Alaska is fiberglass reproductions, and there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, cold water species are very oily. They're next to impossible to completely degrease for the purposes of taxidermy. Also, there's the matter of the scales, which are small and fragile. Frankly, with the quality of blanks available today, there's really no reason to have to deal with skin mounts in Alaskan fish. Yet another thing is that when I was still doing fish professionally, many of my clients were from out of state and caught their fish while staying at lodges, which often have very strict catch and release policies. As such, all my clients had were, hopefully, great photos and a set of numbers, which may or may not have been credible when matched with the photos. Fiberglass reproductions are replicas of the actual fish. Many companies manufacture such replicas. Some are very, very good, and some aren't so good. With more common species, such as rainbow trout or salmon, it's pretty easy to get really close on size to the actual fish. For example, for most of my clients, it was never very difficult to get within an inch or so either way of the actual size, and an inch just isn't something you notice when the fish is on the wall. Not too many folks whip out their tape measures to call you on size when they're at your house as guests. A fiberglass reproduction comes to the taxidermist completely white, like a blank canvas, and it's up to the taxidermist to bring that canvas to life. Honestly, it was my favorite part of taxidermy, with the challenge of making something inanimate look alive enough to believe it could have at one time been swimming in our area's waters. Again, I don't hold myself up to be some kind of fish taxidermy expert, but I have been around enough to feel like I know a few things to look for with regards to a decent quality mount. Here are some things that are important to me and things I tried to incorporate into the fish I did. First of all, a decent mount starts with a decent blank. A crap replica is going to have issues to overcome from the get-go, though that's something you're probably not going to know about. Eyes are extremely important, in my opinion, and not just with fish. The real difference between high-quality glass eyes and economy eyes, which many taxidermists use to save money, is often just a few dollars, but good quality eyes can make all the difference in the world. If the eyes don't look real, none of the rest will matter, in my opinion. On fish, look for natural poses. I've seen more than a few fish mounts that look like they were recently electroshocked, with stiff-looking poses and fins pointing out at unnatural angles. Take the time to request photos of the taxidermist's work or try to see other mounts he or she has done firsthand to decide if that person has the knack for realistic poses. Take a look at the fins. Fins should look healthy but real. What I mean by that is that some replicas comes with fins that do not have a jagged natural edge, such as a real fin would be. A good taxidermist will take the time to create that edge. If it's a skin mount and the real fins are used, they shouldn't look ratty, like a dog chewed on them. In terms of color schemes, the fish will either look believable or it won't. Again, take the time to view past work and compare against photos of live fish. One paint detail to consider is scale tipping. Scales on live fish exhibit tipping. For example, on a rainbow trout, scales on the upper third of the body have a gold color to their edges, while those on the bottom two-thirds will have a silver edge. A good taxidermist tips his scales, though it is more time-consuming to do. Little details like this are often the difference between a so-so mount and a really good one. Sadly, when it comes down to it, for a lot of folks it's all about one thing, the money. All taxidermy, no matter what kind of a great deal you get, is a luxury item. Even the cheap stuff can be expensive. I'd like to say that the more costly stuff is the better quality stuff, but that's not always the case. I will say that very, very seldom will you find high-quality work for a bargain price. I guess in closing, I'd just toss out two things that have held true through the ages. Caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, and the client is always right. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.